Hey, welcome to Stew for Thought, a student podcast project made possible through a special partnership with KBOO Radio and presented by the NAACC. In each podcast, we'll discuss various things revolving around Indigenous people and their way of life, both modern and traditional.
Hi, my name is Apikale. I work at the Native Center as a marketing associate. I'm a junior at PSU, and my major is graphic design, and my minor is film. And I'm half Polynesian, I'm half Tongan and half white.
My name is Raven. I'm a sophomore at PSU. I'm front desk worker and also part of the marketing team. My major is health science, pre-med track, and I'm UPIC, Athabaskan, Shoshone, U, and Coville.
Waklisi Damadichki, Gassassus Asa Wright. Hello, how are you? My name is Asa Wright. I'm Klamath Modoc from Southern Oregon, originally from Chiloquin, and I've been living in Portland for the last 20 years.
Well, awesome. So our first thing we kind of want to ask you slash you tell us about is just who you are, where you're from, and your origin story. How did you come to the creative life?
Like I said, I've been living here in Portland for the last 20 years. I actually moved up here to go to college and am alumni of Portland State. Also alumni of PNCA, so I got my bachelor's here in public health and then my master's of fine art at PNCA in collaborative design. I come from a family of artists, so on my dad's side, my dad and his brothers, my grandpa are all artists, mostly painting, some mixed media, and then a lot of traditional arts, so a lot of bead workers, making regalia, drums, our traditional style cradle boards. And so that's something that I've always grown up with and probably started stringing beads like around 3 years old. And so creativity or art has always been something that has like fed me and something that I've always loved to do and something that has always seemed to come naturally to me. So I would definitely say that it was influenced first by family and then just something I fell in love with. And as I've grown and come across different mediums, I've loved trying out new things all the time. Yeah, so that's how I got started.
Okay, next question. What is your current hustle?
My current hustle, I think, is working for myself and making art work for me. So I really, I think the pressure from family and outside sources, it's always been like, is art a real job? And so the pressure was always there to like, to go to college and get a real job. And so I think in many ways, even though I love public health and have worked in public health for like the last 12 years, in suicide prevention, it wasn't my first go-to. Like I just wanted to be an artist. But I've had that push on me to go get a real job, and that was a real job. And so it was always like art was like a side project. And in the last 2 to 3 years, that's really changed in my life because my brother was diagnosed with leukemia a couple years ago. And then I actually ended up losing him in December. And so it was kind of like this realization of life is really too short to not be doing what you love to do. And so I kind of took that as motivation to not even just like start or, but just jump head first into, okay, this is who I am and this is what I want to do and this is what's important to me. And so I actually quit my job in public health and started working for myself and working in across those mediums. Cause I think in some ways when you're quote unquote an artist, you have to like, in that art community, you have to kind of pick one medium and roll with it, and then you're known as that medium. So you're known as a painter, you're known as a graphic designer, whatever. But I've been able to just kind of do everything that I've been wanting to do. And so, you know, I do a lot of graphic design stuff, which honestly pays most of the bills. I've been able to paint and show work in recent shows, and then I've been able to work as a creative resistance trainer. And so train people and teach people how to break down art skills to make them more accessible to like reservation-based communities. So my hustle is kind of all over the place, but it's doing exactly what I love to do. and working across the mediums that I work in.
Awesome. Well, so you went to PSU and you went to PCA, and me just kind of starting like this art career in Portland. I've grown up in Portland my whole life, and I've always kind of been in the creative pool. And one thing that I've always just has been pushed on me, like I couldn't help but notice, is just kind of how white the city is. And I just am curious to see, have you ever felt like the token person of color in an art like setting, or better yet, like the native token artist?
Definitely both. And sometimes that's together and sometimes it's separate. So what I mean by that is the last public health job that I was just working, I was not only the only Native person working there, but one of a handful of people of color, like literally like one of four people of color. So definitely I felt very tokenized in that space, and even to the point where I had to call it out and it still wasn't acknowledged or noticed, which was a little frustrating. And it's something that I feel like I have to continually work through, because it's a lot of emotional labor to have to point this out, like on the daily, and then still be able to do your work and perform and be creative in those spaces. So yeah, I would definitely say that I've had a lot of that, but I've also had what I consider a privilege and just honor of working for a lot of Native organizations in Portland. So that's been really helpful. I do feel like I'm definitely, when I'm working in those organizations, then I'm more of the like the artist person. But I feel like in those settings, it's more of a like an honored space instead of a tokenized space. It's like, you have this gift, and we would like to use or utilize that gift and help you utilize that gift in whatever work you're doing, so that you're a happier employee. So I think I've just had a really great opportunity to work with Native organizations or Native employers, bosses, directors who have seen that I have that skill and talent, and then asked, is it okay if you want to use that skill and talent within this workplace, and would that make a better work setting for you? So I think in that way, it's worked well for me, because I've been able to introduce that in the work that I've already been doing. And so that kind of helped me build momentum in kind of getting my name out there and a little bit of recognition out there, so that I would have a footing to build clients and to build a work portfolio. So I think that worked in my benefit, and that was a healthier way of looking at my skill sets, instead of like where I've worked in like non-Native settings and have really been just tokenized and just felt like used, I guess, in a way, for my skill or for them meeting their quota of people of color.
What motivates you to keep creating content?
For me, like I was saying before, like art really feeds me. I always equate it to like my oxygen. I need it to live. And it's everything from my work, which pays the bills. It's a way that I network and so meet people and have community. But it's also the way that I replenish myself. So if I'm feeling burnout, or I'm having, you know, quote unquote mental health day, or, you know, feeling down or low, art is something that I go to. So it's a constant in my life. And so I think that there's a problem when I'm not creating, like, and people notice, people who are in my life and who love me and know me will notice, like, oh, I haven't seen anything that you've been making, or, you know, what are you currently working on? And if I have an answer of like, oh, I'm not working on anything right now, then it's kind of a red flag for my friends to be like, what's up? What's going on? You know, what can we help with? Or why don't you come? I've noticed that too with like a lot of my friends. If one of us is feeling down and out, we're having struggles or any kind of thing in our life, it seems like one of us is always just like, hey, why don't you come make art this weekend? Why don't you come to my studio? Or why don't we go to the art museum? And so we always kind of bring art back into each other's lives to figure out, you know, what's going on or to help each other out.
How do you combat artist's block when you get it? Do you have any, like, go-to methods? Or?
I really like to talk it out with friends. Artist block is a real thing, and I think it affects us all. And sometimes it hits in all the worst places, and that's usually when there's a deadline looming. It's definitely a real thing. I really like to just walk through the art museum or just check stuff out or just completely take a break from whatever medium I'm working in that I'm having a block and go do something else. But I think it's important to talk to other artists and just see what they're doing, because I think when you have collaboration, even if it's just talking about each other's work or talking about somebody else's work, just kind of stepping away from your box, because I think as artists, we kind of get stuck in our own headspace. And once we're able to kind of leave that headspace and see, like, bigger picture from what we're so focused in on what that project is, then we're kind of able to break that block a little bit, or at least find a little pieces of inspiration, which is something I like to do. If I'm really, like, I'm working on a graphic design project and have that deadline looming, I'll go paint for a while, or I'll, you know, sit and work on some beadwork and watch a movie and just kind of break away from that. And I'll find that sometimes that usually helps get out of those spaces. But yeah, sometimes it's hard. But I think I really rely on friends when that happens, just to kind of get their feedback and just talk it out. And usually I'll find, like, what's blocking me, or they'll kind of inspire a different way of looking at something.
How have you seen the culture of Oregon and its art change throughout the time, or your time living here?
I would have to definitely go back to what you were saying about a lot of white spaces. In my time here, I would definitely say there's been a shift. And I think it kind of ebbs and flows, though, with who's in the community and who's not in the community. When I first came up here, Quintana Galleries was in the heart of the city. So it was downtown on Broadway. It was a big place that everybody saw and everybody knew was there. It had these big glass windows, and so you could see the art when you were driving by, when you were walking by. And it was like one of these places that I saw just visiting the city, and I was like, I have to go check that place out. And it just having this, like, central point in the city was really cool and really amazing to me. And so I wanted to see more about what was going on with the art scene there. But when I started branching out looking for places, like, where are these indigenous artists, I wasn't really finding a lot. So I think that has changed in some ways, because I'm meeting more indigenous folks, I'm meeting more people of color who are artists. And I think with, like, changes in technology, there's meetup groups and stuff like that are happening more and more from what I was seeing when I first came here. But I think it's definitely still a very white city. But I think there are more opportunities and more communication that's happening now between artists and more collaboration. Like, people are seeing how important collaboration is, not only to, like, benefit Native art, Native community as a whole, but the benefits to their own practice and how that helps you grow as an artist, I think, is really important. And then just from my perspective, how tight-knit the community is here. I think it's really important that we're supporting each other and uplifting each other and not fighting over resources. And I think that happens in the art community. And for the longest time, I think that there were only, you know, a handful of male artists who were only receiving the attention of this, like, indigenous art, you know, title. And I think that's been slowly changing over time. And right now it's a really great time for indigenous women, which I think is really important and really cool. But it's kind of like, it's it's one of those kind of like rock band stories too. It's like where somebody's blowing up and it's like their 15 minutes of fame is right now, but they've literally been working their asses off for the last decade. So it's like it's long overdue for these women to be shining and having the spotlight, but it's like they should have been having it all along. And so it's kind of like a, I don't know, like a proud, like I sit back as a proud friend right now being like, yeah, that's so cool. These guys are getting the spotlight and getting this attention and that their work's being seen and appreciated and valued. And I think that's something that has changed over time too, is that the value of Native art has been increasing and appreciated as a living art form instead of something that's a relic of the past and something that is stereotyped. And so I think a lot of the art right now is abstract and contemporary, which is really cool, and that it's being seen as indigenous art because indigenous artists are making it and not that it's an Indian in a headdress, you know, on canvas. And so I think that's really something that's been important too, and I hope that continues to change and that the value continues to increase, because I think we're still really undervalued and underappreciated as artists and the work they recreate, really.
When you did go to PSU and just kind of your whole college experience as an art major, would you say that you had the resources and the environment was like welcoming for you to do what you wanted to do? You didn't, I mean, like obviously to an extent because it's, you know, there's an educational system, but make the art that you wanted to make? And
I would say no. Just a hard no. I love PSU. I love PSU because it was a second home to me and because I grew up here. And I came here as a teenager. And so I really did a lot of growing and learning about myself and about the world here. I also think that's kind of a sheltered viewpoint of learning what the world is from college perspective. And I don't want to badmouth PSU, especially because I'm sitting here doing podcasts on campus. But I wasn't supported here at all and had a really hard time here. But I spent a lot of time here. So I grew up here, and then I have a 15-year-old daughter, and I felt like she kind of grew up here too. She ended up going to classes with me. She crawled in these hallways for the first time. Like, we spent a lot of time here. But my student time here was really rocky. I was 17 when I started. I started in a department that I didn't want to be a part of, but thought, like, this is what I should do because this is what my family was doing. And back then they had a whole different system where you would come for an orientation and you would tour the campus with students, and then you would go meet with an advisor right away and they would sign you up for classes. And that advisor signed me up for 20 credit load. And I was like, oh, that's 5 classes. I can do that. You know, I was doing 8 in high school. This is fine. You know, and then I ended up totally failing my first year. And it was so heartbreaking for me because I was like, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to go to college. And, you know, I was feeling like big and adult and all this stuff. and then to totally bomb it, I ended up in like student probation. And they're like, you know, if you don't pull your grades up, we're going to have to kick you out. And I was just like, what do I do? You know, ended up signing up with like TRIO and some of these other student support service programs, and found a student advisor through them who really just like saved my time here, and she cared. Like, she really fought for me, and I think that was like the turning point for me, which was like, okay, I do have somebody who has my back and somebody who's here. And at that time the Native Student Advisor didn't exist, and so there was nobody kind of pulling for me that way. And then I think probably the next year Native Student Advisor ended up coming back, and then so I had that role again, and so I felt like I had 2 people that had my back at that point. But then when that was all kind of rocky, I was like, you know, I'm gonna try this art thing. And I went and signed up for graphic design, started doing those classes, and then just hit a wall with one of the professors who was in the graphic design department. Ended up having a death in the family, and I had to leave for a week and go home and do ceremony and all that stuff. And I talked to all of my teachers and professors and was just like, this is what's happening and I have to leave, I have to go home. And this is really important. And everybody was on board. Everybody sent me with my work and told me what was happening. But this one graphic design professor was like, I don't care what's going on with you. And, you know, you need to be here and you need to be doing this. And I was like, you don't understand. This is like a big deal. And I have to be with my family right now. And I came back to an F. And I was like, okay, if I don't pass this class, I don't get to go on to the next set of graphic design classes. And he wouldn't give me a grade. And I actually had the Native student advisor at the time come with me to his office and try to talk to him, and he wouldn't budge. And then we had to go to legal clinic to see if we could get him to budge, and there was no budging. He was just like, I'm going to give you an incomplete, and that's all I'll give you. Like, I'll give you an F or I'll give you an I, and that's it. Or no, it was an X. It was an X. Like, so I never took the class. And so I was going to have to take the class all over again. And at one point, we were in this meeting, and he was just like, I'm never going to pass you in this class. It just, like, floored both of us. We were just like, what is going on? So it was like, that was a hard stop of, like, there's not going to be any way around this guy. Like, you have to take his class. At that time, you had to take this guy's class to get to the next stage. And then later it was kind of like, there were like talks about this guy of him being the person that weeded people out. And so it was a really frustrating time, because it was like, this is where my heart was and this is what I wanted to do. And I just had to go back to that. Like, I guess now I see it as a protective factor of, you know, I'll have to just learn this on my own. I'll have to figure this out. And for now, I'll just go back to, you know, what's going to pay the bills and what's going to be a quote unquote real job. And so that's what I did. And so that was really like a frustrating time and heartbreaking time for me, because I really wanted to just focus on art. And again, it was like another barrier at that time. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm not meant to be an artist. Maybe this isn't going to happen. And so the majority of everything that I've been working on and building on and building up to has been self-taught. It's been me taking the initiative to go learn what I need to learn, me networking on my own and building it on my own. And thankfully, with those Native organizations, like I was saying, I met people who saw, you know, the talent and that role as an artist, and, you know, gave me a shot within that field. So I was doing public health and art at the same time, which is kind of funny because, you know, I was like writing these health reports and like quarterly reports, and then you know, designing the report book that would go out, and that's basically how I got my footing in the door with graphic design, was making all these public health reports that would go out to the tribes and in the Northwest areas.
Dang, I can't believe that professor like
yeah
had a job still after all of that.
Yeah, it was really frustrating, and it felt like it went ignored, and the person, I think the director of the department at that time was interim, so it wasn't even like a steady position, and so I don't think they knew what to do with it, and so they just didn't do anything with it. And I really appreciate the Native student advisor, though, at the time. Like, she really stood up and had my back on that, but it was like she hit the wall too. She did everything she could, and then we weren't able to go any further. And I was just like, you know, I just came from losing a family member. I don't have any energy to fight this further. So it was just like, I guess I'm just changing my route from here. So yeah, it was really frustrating. But I think as time went along, as this building came to fruition, I definitely felt like when I was leaving this place that I had a lot of support here and a big network of people who had my back, and I had their back. So I think as the community grew and as this grew and as the department here for the major grew, the support networks definitely grew.
Okay. In what ways do you see Native art and culture be exploited in Portland?
I was kind of go back to that saying of, they want the culture, but they don't want us, that kind of thing. Because I feel like there are certain groups who want to hang Native art and have Native art here and there, but they don't want to necessarily have to, like, communicate with our communities or deal with our communities. That's kind of how I feel. I also feel like there's like a lot of talk about supporting Native artists like right now in this kind of time frame, but it only ends up being talk. And I'm like, you have so many platforms and so many resources available here. There's so many things that you could do that are so much bigger than just talking about it. And what I mean by that is that we have a mayor right now who says he's supportive of Native art, Indigenous art, but it's like, it's really slow, the movement that's been going on in the city that I've been a part of, or that I've seen anyway. I just think there could be more work to showcase Native artists and Indigenous art. And I think that the city and counties could be doing more to support that. And I think that it's been moving slowly and acknowledge. I mean, a lot of people are doing land acknowledgements now, which I guess is a step in the right direction. You know, there's more use of language. There's more use of, I guess, prayer for, you know, these new bridges that are opening and stuff like that. But it's, I feel in some ways that's really tokenizing us as well. And so it's like, come on, like, you want these little aspects of our culture, but you're not willing to wrap your arms around the rest of our community, who's been struggling for a really long time to get on our feet and to make any headway. And so I think that there's a lot more things that they can be doing that would be helpful. For one, there's like, it really bothers. There's so many empty buildings, and I know that we talk a lot about these empty spaces for our houselessness communities, but also like, there's really no space for Indigenous artists to be creating in the city. I think there's so many like amazing, talented artists across all mediums that are working here who are getting now international recognition, and we'd have no place for, you know, that's a creative hub here. And I think that would be something that could be really helpful to our community, and an easy fix, you know, with open space that's available right now for, you know, people to step up and be like, you know, here's some donated space, or here's some space that you could use temporarily or at a price cut or something like that to be supporting our community, whether that's like from our weavers and beaters and basket makers, like, to people who are painting and doing graphic design. Like, really fostering that, I think, is really important. And we have a lot of these organizations now, Native organizations, who have been really growing in their capacity, I think, birthing a lot of new artists in this space. And so I think there's definitely a need for it, and it would be used. And I'm hoping, as the community of artists grows and collaborates, that there will be something come to fruition from that. Because I think now we're seeing bigger shows that are Indigenous specific, like the Yahao show that just took place in Seattle. That was a really big show from March to August, that had over 200, or I think 200 Indigenous artists. They had like to cap it at 200 because they had so many submissions. But how incredible is that? That there's like one Indigenous art show that they had to like cut it off. There were so many people who wanted to show work in there, and that they were able to showcase 200 artists is amazing to me. But since then, that show has been like, has really started little shows off of it, and then like workshops and trainings for the artists and for communities. And I think that, you know, something that was just an idea of like one or two people grew to this huge thing. And I think it's expanding out now, because a lot of artists here who were here in Portland actually showed in that. I think it's stuff like that that's really important. It's just like the work of a couple handful of people starting something, and then it just spreading and growing. And I think that that's long overdue for Portland, and something that I hope I can be a part of, because I think it would really be great to see here in the city.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I feel like we have the capacity to do that, but it's just everything is so slow here.
Definitely.
Whenever I walk around like Portland, I tend to see that like the city kind of treats a lot of Indigenous art as like a relic, almost like a, you walk into Powell's and there's like so many like nicely like graphic designed visuals of the Columbia River that have, you know, these like patterns that are obviously native but aren't credited. And I just, this is kind of like connecting to like the whole thing we did last year for Design Week, but I guess I feel like there's such a large presence of that in just the Pacific Northwest in general. And I just want to ask if you personally feel like crediting Native artists is getting better, or if it's like shifting to different ways like of alluding to it.
I definitely think that it's growing, and I think that's with a lot of help of like generational shift, which is something that I've been appreciating about millennial groups, is that you all just call shit out. Like, just to be honest, you're just like, you know, whoa, where's the photo credit? You know, it's like, and that didn't really exist for my generation. I think it was just like, oh, this is cool, I'm going to put this here, or this is cool, I'm going to use this. And now there's a greater awareness of like, well, who are you crediting and where is that from and where did that originate and did you ask permission? You know, it's a lot of consent culture, which I think is super important. Also, I think it's really good because it keeps awareness about art in general. Like, there's this whole like co-opting of indigenous art from other people, right? But then there's a co-opt culture within our own community, which I think is really important to acknowledge, in that I'm a Klamath artist, so I'm not going to be creating Lakota designs, or I'm not going to be using Lakota designs in my stuff, and just being really aware of that. So I think that it's kind of like happening with a generational shift and awareness that's being brought up right now of just making those acknowledgements and knowing that those acknowledgements are important. But I think there's still a lot of work out there that is just being used without credit, and that it really is seen as like a culture of the past and not a living culture, which I think is really harmful to us, and that we should be calling out more. But I think it's definitely shifting. I think it's just really slow. I wish it would move faster at this point. But I definitely do think that it's important to be recognizing how our community works, and that our community does work and put stuff out, and that these are like, we're a living, breathing culture, and that culture is gonna, you know, ebb and flow and change with time, as I think all things should. But that also that these, you know, maybe nameless designs or these like basket designs or geometric designs, that they're really foundational for us, that they mean something, that they're important as a name, that, you know, you used to be able to look at these basket designs or beadwork designs and know where that person originated from, what their tribe was, even down to what family they belonged to. So I think that it's really important for us to be calling that out and saying that, you know, no, this is important to us, and you can't just take this and use it, and that it shouldn't be just, you know, an aesthetic that adds to whoever's design, and just hung anywhere. So I think it's important, and I hope that it builds momentum and changing faster.
Kind of going along with that, how do you feel about non-local natives coming here?
I feel like old school Portland, like, it's nice for you to visit, but don't stay. Like, traffic's already bad enough.
Yeah.
No, I'm laughing about this because, too, I was complaining in the car this morning as I was driving my kid to school. I'm just like, what's up with all these Washington plates? Like, what the heck are you doing here? Yeah, I think, I don't know. It's hard because I think that like this whole weirdness that we love about Portland, that everybody else is loving it too, and that people are wanting this kind of urban city lifestyle, but they're also wanting it to be a small community feel. And I think that we're lucky in that Portland kind of has both in some aspects, where, you know, it's still big enough to be called a city, but also small enough to where you have pockets of community. And I think that that's really important for people these days. But it's hard, and sometimes feels overloaded, and I feel like everybody's a graphic designer here, and it's like being a barista. Like, everybody's a barista, or everybody's a graphic designer, or everybody's a barista who's a graphic designer. Yeah. Like, it's just all...
That's me.
Yeah. It's just overloaded.
Man, calling me out.
Yeah. No, and it's everybody. It's like, that's what you have to do to exist, is you have to hustle, and you have to be everywhere at one time, and so... It gets to be a lot, but I think it's also cool in the fact that there seems to be a place for all of us, you know, like, you know, you find these, you know, different like max lists and all these things where, you know, there's like 175 graphic designers on one page and you're just like, holy cow, how are all of us working? But somehow we are. We have like our little niches, and we have our work, and we have our communities or our networks that we're communicating through and living in. And there seems to be a place for all of us. So I think that's pretty cool. But I definitely would appreciate like a stronger network of Indigenous folks working together and collaborating together. And I think that's something that's really cool. This whole idea of like definitely in Portland, how we have this appreciation and love for supporting small businesses. Yeah. I think that our Indigenous community should really be pushing to be supporting each other and working with each other. And I think that's growing. And I think that's, you know, definitely with the help of the Native American Chamber here, as they've been growing in capacity, that they've been really helping the businesses here network better. And I think that's really important that we have, like, you know, these businesses like... you know, marketing groups and stuff like that who are Indigenous-owned businesses who are then, you know, reaching out to Native Indigenous graphic designers in the community, you know, who are then working with Native artists to help, you know, bring in different things that they're and work cross medias. And so I think that's, like, super cool, like, to just be knowing that there is a network here, but I think that it could be bigger and stronger and that we could be really, really digging in and supporting each other and building off of that.
Who are some artists that inspire you?
My dad. My dad's like my hero artist. Just growing up, watching all the work that he's created and how patient he was in teaching me a lot of the things that I know. And my grandpa. My grandpa, he's so funny. He's in his 80s. He's like 85 now. And he's still... cuts wood for the elders. And I'm like, Grandpa, you are the elder. Like, what the heck? But up until a few years ago, he was still doing a lot of beadwork and a lot of art, which was really cool to see and really inspiring, because I'm like, cool, someday I'm going to be that old guy making beadwork and painting and doing some cool stuff. But definitely my peers are inspirational to me. I love seeing what people are doing and how people have grown. I really have big appreciation for Toma Avila, who has been blowing up on murals, and the designs that he's been coming up with are just really amazing. I love how people how those peers of mine are really using cultural designs like from their own tribes and implementing them and having those be seen like worldwide is just really inspiring too. People like Kaila Farrell Smith and Natalie Ball. Some older generations, like I really love George Flett, Yakima, Spokane, like his artwork up on the buildings in those areas. It was like in the color that he used and the movement in his work has always been really inspiring. And I used to, you know, try to copy his work as best as I could when I was a teenager. Like, if I can draw like George, you know, I've made it, you know. And so definitely artists like that and artists like... Sam English, like I just really loved how the use of their colors and the movement and the way that their people looked that they drew. So yeah, it's inspirations from everywhere, but definitely like the local artists that I saw growing up were definitely inspirational. And then just all these like grandmas and aunties and uncles who sit and bead for their kids and their grandkids and all that stuff is really cool to see.
I think you'll like this question. if you were a crayon, what color would you be? And what would you be called? Or named?
I tend to go to reds or like maroons. So probably some some kind of like dark maroon with like some metallic flake or something like that.
Wow.
Fancy. Yeah.
What would the name be?
It'd probably end up being Mighty MODOK. That's my tag that I use a lot and something that I've slowly become known as and nicknamed. So that it would probably definitely be that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dope. I like that question. That is a really good question.
I put it in there.
I would use that crayon.
Nice.
I think we're kind of coming to an end. So do you have any questions for us?
No. I am just appreciative of the time and to be asked what I think about all this. And I think you guys had really great questions.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us answers and talking with us.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.